WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. This election campaign will be remembered for many things, one of them being the preponderance of polls. We've seen more polls taken by the individual media organizations than ever before. There were quickie overnight polls and polls that measured registered voters and those that targeted only likely voters. Eric Larson is a feature writer for The Wall Street Journal and writes about polls in his new book, The Naked Consumer: How Our Private Lives Become Public Commodities. Larson says polls are easy to manipulate and are all wrong.
Polls are incredibly vulnerable to error. At any one time, you may have some polls that are right, some that are wrong. Frankly, there's not much way to tell until the votes are finally in. When I say that all polls are wrong, I'm pointing to the fact that, for example, every poll, every national poll, automatically excludes Hawaii and Alaska. Okay, so maybe...
Is that because it's a long-distance call?
Yeah, it's expensive, and logistically, it's tough to do. Every poll excludes Hawaii and Alaska. Every poll excludes households that do not have a telephone. Okay, maybe that's not that significant a number of people. However, the percentage of households with incomes below $5,000 who have no phones and thus who cannot be polled is about 30%. The percentage of black households with no telephone is about 15%. So right there, you're talking about a certain proportion of the electorate that is automatically, without consideration, excluded from polls. Now, you know, maybe we can just discount that. But there are other points that one has to consider in looking at a poll. There is so much that we as consumers, and we voters, believe me, are consumers. There is so much that we do not know about the polls that we hear about every day. And some of the things that we don't know can be terribly important.
Error can
seep into a poll from anywhere. It's an established fact, for example, that the interviewers who do the polls, what the University of Michigan Survey Research Center found is that among their polling interviewers, and they do polls all the time, surveys of all kinds, they found an astonishing consistency in the refusal rate, that is, the rate at which people refused to talk to the interviewer. What I'm referring to is simply the fact that one interviewer will have a constant rate of refusal as low as 6%. The best interviewer will have that. In other words, in only 6% of the cases, he will fail to get a response from the person he's calling. The worst interviewer in this particular study had a 42% refusal rate, meaning that in 42% of the cases, people he called refused to talk to him. And that's constant for each of these interviewers over their interviewing careers, which says that there is something that we cannot put our fingers on. I say we, I mean that the pollsters cannot put their fingers on, that causes people to respond not so much to the questions being asked, but to the interviewer himself.
Within the last week, we've seen some changes in the polling, and the changes seem to be tied to this issue of likely voters. Is this a new way to think about polling, for polling companies to think about who is going to be a likely voter and then base their information on that?
No, it's not a terribly new concept. It's this notion of the probable electorate. There are problems there as well. Pollsters as early as 1976 were using this kind of data. And one study found a very interesting point, and that was that, first I should explain what goes into one of these probable electorate polls. There is an attempt made to find out the likelihood that the person at the other end of the phone is going to vote. The way that's done is to find out if that person is a registered voter and also if that person has voted in presidential elections in the past. One study was done with American voters, one such study, to find out, or actually there was a study done to evaluate one of those probable electorate polls that was done I believe it was late in the 70s. And the researchers went back and actually talked to the people who had been polled. And these people had reported that they had, in fact, voted in a previous presidential election. The percentage of those who, in fact, had not voted in that election was 12%. So already we're talking about a significant source of error there.
Well, in talking about likely voters, what the pollsters seem to be saying is that people behave in consistent manners, is that people don't change, even if the issues change or the candidates change. Looking at this 1992 election, does the issue of likely voters make any sense to you?
Well, I think that the polling likely voters versus polling the mass of the electorate is actually a good idea. It does you little good to, if what you're interested in is only the outcome of the election, it does you little good to poll people who are not going to vote, and who are not going to vote because, A, they're not registered, and, B, you get a pretty good indication that they've never voted before. What it does do is it gives you perhaps a more real sense of who really is going to go to the polls and how those people really are going to vote. The presumption is that somebody who has voted in the past and who is a registered voter has thought a little bit more solidly about what's going to happen in this election and is likely then to have made up his mind.
But it seems as people only in anticipation about what voters are going to do are saying that this election might be different from other elections and that there seems to be a greater interest in the public on the issues, that the choices seem to be a little more clear to people, and perhaps people are going to defy the pollsters in terms of their behavior.
Well, yeah, I mean, that I'm not so sure that cuts to the issue of the probable electorate. I think we're talking about a fundamental problem with polls in general on that score. What is very interesting about this election is the presence of Ross Perot. There is always a fundamental question of whether a poll is really capturing a real-world informed phenomenon or not. When a pollster calls, it's always very tempting, especially in an election like this, to say, well, I'm going to vote for Perot, because you're ticked off, you're kind of bored with the blandness of the other two characters, and Perot is kind of funny, and he's sort of a protest candidate. And so in a lot of the polls to date, I suspect what we've seen is a very strong showing on Perot's part that is actually a false indicator of how well he's doing. I think it's very easy for people to tell a pollster, yeah, look, I'm voting for Perot. I mean, I'm getting out of this thing. This is ridiculous. I'm voting for Perot. But when it comes time to actually vote, when push comes to shove, I think what we're going to see is those people who said, yeah, I'm voting for Perot, obviously going for Clinton or Bush.
Well, I want to talk some more, but I want to take a quick break first. And my guest is Eric Larson, and we're talking about poll taking, which is part of a book that he's just written called The Naked Consumer. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Eric Larson, and we're talking about polls and poll taking, and also talking about a book he's just written called The Naked Consumer. What are your thoughts about exit polling? And again, are people honest about how they actually voted?
Well, my feeling about exit polls is that on the one hand, you're dealing with, it's really the one set of campaign polls where you're dealing with potentially a concrete body of information. Now, I say potentially because I believe that in America, I mean, if you go to a party tomorrow after the election, and you ask the first 10 people you see who they voted for, I would say it's very likely that you're going to get a good percentage of those 10 people who are not going to tell you because to them it's a very private matter. I mean, that's what America's all about. You can vote and nobody has to know who you voted for. So my question about the exit polls is, if you're standing there hitting up voters as they leave the booth, what percentage of people are not answering your questions? It's very important to know that. If 50% are not answering your questions and won't tell you, then you have a very biased sample and probably an inaccurate sample, because what you're measuring then is not the body politic. You're measuring the people who wanted to tell the pollster for whom they voted.
How do you think do polls define the issues for the candidates and for the election? And is it a matter of candidates testing out an idea, seeing how people respond to it through a poll, and then espousing it as their own?
Oh, yeah. I believe that polls have become, not only is the media, the newspapers, the TV newscasts, not only are we all obsessed with polls, but the candidates in turn, because of the emphasis that the public media put on polls, the candidates themselves have begun to realize, I mean, over the last 20 years, that there is something to be learned from these polls in terms of shaping their own message. What's happened is this kind of damaging feedback loop where the candidates go with their pollsters to the people, ask them what they'd like to hear, and then turn around and tell them exactly that. Now, that may be good marketing in terms of Procter & Gamble-style marketing, where you're trying to turn out the next frozen pizza. I'm not sure it's so good when the product you're talking about is government. What we expect or should expect from our candidates is a passionate conviction, regardless of what the issues are. But you at least should have a candidate who feels deeply that something should happen in America.
Eric Larson is a feature writer for The Wall Street Journal and author of the new book, The Naked Consumer.